You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
This was about the moment Rosa Parks shouldered her cross, put her worldly goods aside, was willing to sacrifice her life so that that young man in Money, Mississippi, who had been so well protected by the Pullman porters, would not have died in vain. When Mrs. Parks said no, a passionate movement was begun. No longer would there be a reliance on the law. There was a higher law. When Mrs. Parks brought that light of hers to expose the evil of the system, the sun came and rested on her shoulders, bringing the heat and light of truth. Others would follow Mrs. Parks. Four young men in Greensboro, North Carolina, would also say no. Great voices would be raised, singing the praises of God and exhorting us to forgive those who trespass against us. But it was the Pullman porters who safely got Emmett to his granduncle, and it was Mrs. Rosa Parks who could not stand that death. And in not being able to stand it, she sat back down.
He's Scott Winter.
And she's Stacy Waite. And of course, that was poet Nikki Giovanni reading an excerpt of her poem, The Rosa Parks.
We open the show with Giovanni because today we're talking to political poets, poets who aren't afraid to talk about the political intentions of their art, and certainly Giovanni is one of them.
On the show today, we'll also hear from three other women poets, Allison Hedge Koch, Don Lonsinger, and Yona Harvey, about the politics of the poetry that they write. But first, here's a little bit of what Nikki Giovanni had to say about the poem we just heard her read.
But I had become incredibly disenchanted when people just were saying, oh, she was just tired, she didn't know what she was doing. Of course she did. She was a committed woman. And I wanted that poem to show. Of course, I've written other poems about Mrs. Parks and probably will until I no longer am able to write because she's an icon. She's iconic.
Stacy, in Robert Fugli's interview with Giovanni, she talked about the political work of her poetry, and I think her ideas about continuing to write about important historical figures also expresses Giovanni's commitment to remembering as a political act.
Nikki Giovanni is, as many of us know, the author of many books, numerous poetry collections, an autobiography entitled Gemini, which was finalist for the National Book Award. And more recently, her children's picture book, Rosa, which is of course about the civil rights legend Rosa Parks, became a Caldecott Honors book and reached number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list. The book, highlighting Giovanni's commitment to tell and retell some of the most powerful stories of resistance.
And poet Allison Hedge Koch, winner of the American Book Award and author of Dog Road Woman, Blood Run, and numerous other books, is also deeply committed to the political project of her poetry. She talked with Stacy from her office in Oklahoma about the possible reasons some poets might not name themselves as political poets and about her dedication to the work of poetry and politics.
So I think a lot of writers, a lot of artists in general, you know, number one, don't want to be compartmentalized or categorized in a certain way because they feel it'll limit them to that. And number two, if they admit to things that they are doing on some level, there could be people who are against that type of action who will make things difficult for them. And number three, maybe they don't know if it's all that they're, if they're always going to be involved that way. And so they maybe don't want to name themselves in that direction. And it, you know, poetry is complicated in many ways, but I don't think you sacrifice. A lot of people think that if you come in active in your work, that it sacrifices whatever's possible in poetry, and I vehemently deny that. I think people live in a cloud of fear, and a lot of people are afraid to be upfront about things because they're afraid that they will be characterized or categorized, and I figured they're going to hate me anyway. I'm going to be who I am, so I think some of it is fear. You know, a lot of people are living in this country and elsewhere in the world in this huge cloud of fear, and if they admit to something or fess up to something, you know, the political police are going to come in and make sure they don't get work, you know, and it happens, and they're reacting to something that's real. You know, for me personally, I can't do that.
We thought it might be interesting after talking to Giovanni and Koch to talk to Don Lonsinger, a poet whose work is less explicitly political, and see what she had to say about the relationship between poetry and politics. And she had another way of describing how some poets resist that label of being a political poet.
We have so much rhetoric in our culture about American individualism and sort of manifesting our own destiny. And I don't think that poetry is divorced from that entirely. And so I think poets are very nervous about saying like that nothing should compromise the art and that nothing should compromise the poetics, as if being concerned about these large, tremendously important, tremendously things that have tremendous material impact in our lives should somehow make our artistry more facile is sort of befuddling to me, actually.
A poet and essayist, Don Lonsinger is the author of the poetry collection Whelm, which won the Idaho Prize in Poetry and was just released from Lost Horse Press.
Scott, it was really fascinating to talk to Lonsinger about her book Whelm in the context of its political work. The book is so true to its title, overwhelming in its dense images and theoretical underpinnings. Lonsinger talked about and shared a poem in the book called The Case of Lydia.
What I can say about this poem is that it's probably marking an interest in my book, Whelm, and in a lot of my work, in the body as a site of contention. This might sound weird, but the body is a site of contention in the world of late capitalism. So as you'll notice, there's also an interest in my book in display cases and dioramas. So this idea of what has been sort of excavated outside of its natural habitat and made into something else. So this is sort of dramatizing that, I guess, through a young girl whose name is Lydia. The Case of Lydia. Lydia treasures looking out from within display cases, tenderly climbs inside, a fawn beside mannequins. She leans against glass, tries to comprehend legs like lost roots in the water project. Yellow descends its butterface, trammels the ellipse in the dark horse breath of planets. Curtains across the pedestal dream, and Lydia swims in the solitude of observation. Divinely plotless diorama, mediumship. Eventually, the glass takes her shape, begins to slip cellophane around her skin. Lydia vessel, Lydia capillary, Lydia, Lydia, Lydia drained Lydia, but for the real Lydia who lies down inside this thin, transparent version of herself, is unhinged by the vim pastoral of her former body, can only look up through her domed skylight skull, envy the outline that cages her. Lowercase Lydia, Lydia gathered and frozen in an aquarium of Lydia.
While it might not be as obvious as maybe other places or other poets, there's definitely a really cool political commentary on gender happening in that poem. And I think a lot of women poets are thinking about gender in ways that do some really important political work, and Lonsinger's poem really captures the relationship between capitalism and the exploitation of women's bodies.
Our next writer, Yona Harvey, author of the book Hemming the Water, just released this year from Four Way Books, is often characterized as a nonlinear poet, and I think sometimes poems that aren't obviously telling stories are less likely to be characterized as political. But Harvey told Stacy a bit about the ways her poems look outward as a kind of political move. And for Harvey, this takes her back to gender as well.
Every, like, curiosity or, I don't know, exploration starts in some way with yourself, myself, but I don't ever want to stay stuck there, just to be so inward-looking that I can't see the world around me. And so I do think there's a project, a political project about, like, I don't know, connecting with other women and girls, young selves, not just in the United States, but around the world. That, I don't know, that's very important for me. Like, I don't know, women, the project of women's intuitiveness, intelligence, intellect, way of seeing, you know, I think I'm always kind of grappling with that.
¶¶
I talked with Harvey about the idea that explicitly political projects in poetry might be somehow compromising their artistic integrity, which is something we hear a lot. And here's what Harvey had to say about that.
It's, again, that sort of devaluing of political engagement, maybe, or this idea that it can't possibly be a so-called good poem or crafted poem if it's engaging politics, you know. At least that seemed to be something that I heard a lot, you know, as a emerging poet or poetry student or whatever. But I kind of find that that's a really bogus argument, and that's why I'm so invested, I think, in a different kind of take on that. Because really, I think what's underneath that is, don't say anything that indicts me or makes me feel uncomfortable or whatever. So the way that you can sort of bully someone out of making you, like, examine yourself is to say what they're doing or writing is off or wrong. And that, again, like, fits in my mind into that sort of narrow, one-way kind of vision.
You know, Scott, Harvey spoke a lot about her engagement with political ideas that had to do with gendered ways of knowing. She told me how important she thought it was for us to learn how to value knowing that comes from an intuitive or emotional place, which you might think of as feminine, maybe, rather than a more intellectual space.
And that seems important, particularly in our current moment and political landscape. I wish a lot more politicians and academics could really take that to heart.
Yeah, me too. And if we want to think more about that idea or that intuitive place, Harvey experiments with these ways of knowing in her poem Sound, Part 4, Notes on Polyphony.
At first, I felt my head was too much with me. Take it off, I heard a voice say. Your head, you got to take it off. So, I closed my eyes and took my head by the ears and turned. It came off easy, my head, like all my life it was waiting for me to unscrew it. So I sat it down quietly beside me, and this allowed my mouth, which all before had been sewed shut, to open and sing. What have I to dread? What have I to fear? And my hips, torso, and upright arms trembled at that sudden a cappella. I want to thank you for hearing this small trickle in a sea. I am trying to steady myself as I wait. There's a bored shark coloring the water. There's a girl cradling her head somewhere. She is lost, and someone has left her at the shore without a song, without a whistle. There is only her blood and the blood of her siblings. There is only the sun, like the glimmer of the state's buttons, erasing the girl. You have placed her in my throat, and now I can reattach my head. The girl is inside me. She can move now as my body moves. My neck, my head, nodding.
I really love listening to Yonah Harvey read and wish we could listen to her a little bit longer, but we've got to end our show and thank all four poets on the show today for talking to us about their work and for doing that political work in the first place.
And thanks as always to you for listening to Air Schooner.
Air Schooner is a biweekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Eric Jones and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.